SBS live streams and podcasts are supported by advertising.
Need a few minutes to reset? Great Minds is a podcast from SBS that guides you through different meditation styles from around the world. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to SBS News.
The Commonwealth Secretary-General has made an appeal for developed nations like Australia to speed up the clean energy transition as federal budget deliberations here reach their final stages. Ahead of a Commonwealth Heads of Government meeting in Samoa later this year, Baroness Patricia Scotland has warned some Commonwealth countries in the Pacific could soon cease to exist, and it would be unconscionable not to act. She spoke to SBS Chief Political Correspondent Anna Henderson from the Samoan capital, Apia.
I'm really pleased to be able to speak with you, particularly as I'm in Samoa in preparing for the Commonwealth Heads of Government meeting, which will take place in October later this year.
So let's go straight to really one of the most difficult areas to negotiate in this region and one of the toughest topics for many of the countries that are involved, which is climate change and how they're being impacted already. Last year, you spoke about the need for Australia to step up on this front. Has that happened? What else does Australia need to do?
Well, I think Australia has stepped up. They are supporting us in terms of our climate finance access hub. But I need to be clear that there is much, much more to do. So everything that Australia has done, we would say thank you for. But if you're asking, is there more to do, then I'm afraid I'd say absolutely.
And what are the expectations you're hearing from some of the leaders of these countries about the role Australia needs to play now?
We need people to really step up. And it's not just Australia, though I know you're talking about Australians, it's everyone. We all have to step up, but we've got to do more. We have to share the knowledge and the expertise of what works and what doesn't work, so we can get them there faster. We've got to get commitments to work, continue to work on the Blue Charter, on the Living Lands Charter, on common sensing, all those things, the instruments that we have created to try and help our countries to do better. And we need the support from the more advanced countries, from the wealthier countries, to help us to do that. And the Commonwealth Secretariat is doing everything we can to assist our member states. And I think we've demonstrated the efficacy of what we can do and what we are doing. But there's so much more that we can do and we must do, because we're now, as I said before, at code red. But, you know, we've gone past the 1.5. We are at tipping point. And I know that many of our small states are literally trembling at the idea that their island may no longer be able to survive if this gets any worse. And it's happening right now, today.
You're seeing these disasters firsthand. You're touring those areas. What kind of human stories and human suffering are you seeing?
Well, you know, it's just appalling. Just last year in October, you had the Category 5 cyclone Lola, which ravaged Vanuatu, leaving 40,000 children in need of humanitarian assistance, causing widespread damage to homes, infrastructure and crops. Look what happened as cyclone Lola struck Vanuatu. It was still reeling from the record-breaking twin cycles of Judy and Kevin, which struck 48 hours of each other last year. And what we're seeing is these violent storms are not only happening more often with shorter gaps, but the devastation they cause are terrible. And you've seen children whose families have just been rent apart. It is literally heartbreaking when you see people with no homes, with no schools, with damage caused to their physical bodies, with lost ones who'll never come back. And when you're a small state, you know virtually every person who's died. It becomes deeply personal. And I think one of the reasons I'm so delighted that the 56 leaders are going to come to Samoa is when you come to a small state, it's not then something someone else is telling about. You'll see it, you'll taste it, you'll hear it, you'll hear the stories. And I think you cannot help but be touched by it.
At the same time, does a country like Australia need to, for example, stop mining coal, which is something that regional advocates concerned about the climate have persistently asked for?
One of the most important things every single member of the Commonwealth is sovereign. And the people of Australia, having voted the government of their choice, are going to have to work out how they are going to manage the different strains. And there will be pressures on every single member state to think how they're going to adapt and change and how quickly they can do it. You will know that every country in our Commonwealth, having made the commitment back in 1989 to Langkawi, has said they're sold up, that they're absolutely committed to delivering the Paris Agenda, which we agreed in 2015. And we did that as a Commonwealth in Malta in November of 2015. Now, how we do it quickly is contentious. And we know that there are those who would want it everything to be done today, and those who say you have to have a transition period. And we have both within our family. So we are continuing to do what we've always done, drive, push hard for consensus, get the empirical data, which will help our member states to say you have a choice and you have an opportunity to make the right choices without undermining, devastating your economies. And we understand that that is the first commitment that a country will have. They want to look after their people. And we will come up with as many ingenious ways that we can find to help countries to do what they must do more quickly. But at the end of the day, it is for every sovereign country to come to its own decisions as to what it is able to do. But we have to understand it's a choice. And I pray that every one of our countries will make the right choice, because the right choice for the world ends up being the right choice for each of our citizens. If our world no longer exists, then we are all going to lose out.
Why do people want to be at work? To feel heard, appreciated, part of something, and to know there's a career path for everyone. Inclusive workplaces are linked to increased innovation, productivity, and employee satisfaction. Make your organization a place where people want to be. For inclusion and diversity training, visit inclusion-program.com.au.
Well, Secretary General, you did speak about the need for sharp honesty at COP28. So given what you know about the nature of Australia's current energy mix, the reliance on coal, for example, the fact that there is no nuclear power element to how Australia does things at the moment, and also that there is this transition happening to renewables, do you have any honesty, perhaps any insights to give about how quickly you would like to see that transition happen, for example?
Well, I would like to see the transition happen fast. I also know that we've got to look at the empirical data to find the roadmap which enables people to do that. Because, you know, often people will say, "I make me chaste, but not today, tomorrow." And what we have to do is to come up with a roadmap to say, we understand your problem, we understand how difficult it is, but this is a sensible, cogent, deliverable way that you could do this faster. And so I think rather than blaming people, we have to understand why they are where they are, but help to create the stepping stones, which gives them the choice to say, you don't have to do this. You know, you're being sold a pup. Here is a way, if you choose, you can do that. So persuasion, encouragement. For me, you know, I'm a lawyer. I like evidence. So I like to say, show me the way out. Show me what I have to do. And if you logically and empirically justify it, then I can do it.
What do you think the risk may be that if these smaller countries don't feel they have the funding support or the backing of other members of the Commonwealth around their climate concerns, they could just end up leaving the Commonwealth altogether?
Well, I think what will happen is even sadder that it's not leaving the Commonwealth. What will happen, and we have to face this, it is a reality. Some of our island states will disappear. And if and when that happens, those people will have to find somewhere else to go, somewhere to be. And if they are not able to stay on their island, then they're going to come and live with all of us. And this climate refugee status is going to happen more and more. So we have a choice. Either we help our member states to save their islands, to live in their countries, to remain self-sufficient, or we will have to face the reality of the climate refugee situation getting worse and worse. So we either pay less now or we'll pay a fortune tomorrow. I think a stitch in time is always the best position, because you will pay less and do more. And I don't think it's really sensible to avoid the reality of where we are. I've been to Tuvalu, I've been to Nauru, I've been to some of these tiny countries in the Commonwealth. When I went to Tuvalu, I put my arms out like this, and you could see the sea almost on both sides. The water line is so high, if it gets any higher, that island is in serious jeopardy. Now, we have to stop that from happening. People's culture, their livelihoods, their families, their loved ones, all destroyed. Why? Because we didn't choose to help. It's unconscionable. And I think we have to help, and we have to help now. And it will be too late to say, I'm sorry, because if you don't know, that's fair enough. But we do know, and we can still prevent this if we act now.
And I appreciate what you're saying, but for those countries that may not be at imminent threat in the way that those nations currently are, but are increasingly getting frustrated about the Commonwealth's actions, particularly some of the larger nations, and whether or not they're changing their practices and their emissions quickly enough. Is there a risk that they may walk away from the Commonwealth?
I think there isn't a risk that they may walk away from each other, because if you think about it, the 33 small states are the majority of small states in the world. There are only 42 small states in the world, and the 33 most vulnerable are in our Commonwealth. And the strength comes from solidarity. They are the largest number of nations in the Commonwealth, and every country in our Commonwealth has one equal vote. I think that they may walk away from everything, because what they're really frightened of is they may no longer exist. When you are facing an existential threat, you want to do everything to stay alive. May they stop going to meetings? Yes. Maybe they can't even afford to go. May they become discouraged? Perhaps. But you know what I have been so touched and amazed by is the determination, the resilience, the fight. If everybody else gives up, they are not giving up on the fight. They will fight and fight and fight until there's nothing to fight for. And that is the reality of the lives of those who are facing the existential threat every day. I hope they never give up. I hope they continue with that resilience. They have been the countries who have expressed the most virulent support for the Commonwealth, because the Commonwealth has stood by them absolutely cheek by jowl. I hope that the larger countries will hear their call. I hope that they will answer. And if the smaller countries do walk away, then we will understand why. But at the moment, they're fighting.